Hello, everyone. This is movie night. It is gonna fucking suck.
Yeah, this is. We usually. So, up until now, as far as I can remember, I don't remember all I don't remember all the movie nights we've done, but I can safely say this is the first one that I dread as much as I do.
The first one that's made you feel ill.
We like to do one movies that we like, but there was a specific reason we decided to do this one. It's because of a whole idea we got, and it's involved with the Shoot the Shit that by the time you're hearing this, came out just this past Monday. So, and we haven't even recorded it from our perspective. So just to cut to the chase, tonight we watched the movie of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And
I want you to leave that entire sigh.
Oh, you better believe I will. So yeah, I'm sure that you are in some way satisfied, Ashley, by the fact that when I rewatched it, I more understood your feelings about it and deeply agreed with them. Because I remember when I was a kid watching this, although I had a terrible sleep schedule, so I, like, napped through chunks of it, but,
apologies for the dog that no problem. Definitely came through on the mic.
Yeah, it's fine.
But, that's how loud this bitch is. Okay, so I got a new mic.
Oh, yeah, you did.
It is a condenser microphone, so it shouldn't be picking things up from other rooms, but this dog is so fucking... Why? I think we're good now.
Okay. Where were we?
I don't know, that was like 5 minutes ago.
Basically, this movie is so for those of you who don't know, let's start off with the basics. So The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is originated, I believe, and please correct me actually if I'm wrong, as a radio show. Yes, I think it was a radio show. A British comedy radio show that was it's like big sci-fi thing. You should probably explain it better.
It stars a radio show. It is a sci-fi story about a man who is, through various means we will get into later, is forced to go through the galaxy. And alongside him is a handy little handbook, which the series is named after, which is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which tells him about all these different things. It's not a major thing in the story, but it's... The things surrounding it are.
It's a fun little device, little vehicle for information.
And then it was adapted to books. It had a TV show, which is great, which is based on the radio show more than it is the book. But the first book is basically the radio show, and then it diverges. And then there's the movie. After the movie, no one's done anything.
Although they are going to soon.
Killed it. Yes, but they are making an... There's a lot of reporting that there's a Hulu show that's going to be based on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that's set to come out this year, but it's fucking call bullshit.
Yeah, I don't call bullshit on the series. And we haven't
seen anything.
I call bullshit on it coming out in 2021. Yeah. Oh my god, it'd be hilarious and so goddamn depressing if it was based off of the movie and not any of the other source material.
It better not be based on the movie.
Although, okay, so I will say, although the worst of my feelings on this movie are absolutely, obviously dreadful, if you know anything about this franchise, but there are some feelings that I have that are surprisingly positive as well.
I'm not coming out of it fully negative.
Yeah, no, this new movie, but... I will say this movie did not do everything wrong, and after we go through the plot, I will say exactly what I mean. And of course, for people who really need this fucking reminder, spoiler alert for the movie, at least.
Yeah, we're about to get into the story.
Yeah, so the movie starts with this man played by Martin Freeman, who is one of my favorite actors. He plays the main character dude. I don't remember any names.
Arthur Dent.
He's this British man is that rural England? It looks like rural stuff.
It's very, it looks more rural.
It's in the middle of nowhere, rural England.
Which is weird because of another plot point. Like, why would they have to bulldoze that house?
Yeah.
Spoilers. They have to bulldoze his house.
Okay. Of any spoilers you could give, that literally happens like 5 minutes from the start of the movie. Yeah,
that's the next plot point.
Yeah. So he's just minding his own ding-dang business in his house. And of course, they had to add some cheap slapstick in there, him thumping on the fucking ceiling, because it's an... This movie seems like a misguided collaboration between British and American filmmakers. Like it
truthfully.
Because you can feel how much the American writers in it went, we need more people getting thumped on the head throughout the movie.
Yeah. From what I'm seeing from it, it is a British source material and has their very dry sense of humor mixed with America, which has a very simple sense of humor.
Yeah, and it could have, I don't think that is a thing that is inherently destined to go wrong, but it did.
Yeah, no, I think there were some things that were definitely mostly American in thinking that were done well.
Yeah, now, again, not everything, but just the vast majority, but not everything in this movie was shit. But anyway, continuing.
Also, before we get too far into it, because the first thing I'm going to gripe about is literally the next scene, there's a lot of changes from the source materials, and they're not done as well. They detract. And as we go through, I will be saying them. It's mostly in the first half because the story really changes after, like, the story
changes,
and then the very end is kind of like the original source material, but the middle of the movie is nothing like the source material.
And also, I just want to say, this movie shifts plots almost like, and I know you probably haven't seen this, but almost like, for those of you who've seen it, like the midpoint of Hancock, which is a movie infamous for feeling like two separate movies because they switched out people making it halfway through the production of it. And it's not a bad movie because of it, but you can very much tell that it was two different ideas slapped together time-wise. But anyway, and another thing, and this is something I did want to save for after the plot, but because it's going to become so relevant as we go forward, I want to say, I recognized, and I'm not someone who knows the Hitchhiker's Guide franchise very well, but I do know bits and pieces, elements of it. The way that they slotted this in, they take elements that I know are from the source material, at least generally speaking, you know, little bits, little jokes, and little general stuff, but they slot it in like American comedy, which doesn't mix well, and what it ends up being like is that shitty random for the sake of random kind of comedy if you don't know where it's coming from. And God, it just felt like just such an extra level of insulting, because it's like it feels like if you gave Melissa McCarthy, I'm sorry, but most of your movies, come on, it feels like if you gave Melissa McCarthy Hitchhiker's Guide jokes and decided to give her that much power with it. Anyway, but
yeah, the thing with random is the original series does a lot of random. Absolutely, right. Especially in the beginning, like, there's a lot thrown at you that it's just there, because that's how the universe is, and that's the point they're making with it being so crazy and random. But their random is for confusion and for tone setting. This one's random for no reason. It doesn't feel like it was intentionally random.
It kind of feels like a 14-year-old decided to write some Hitchhiker's Guide fan fiction and try and put it together. Like, it doesn't happen.
It's a child's retelling of Hitchhiker's Guide.
Holy shit, you're kind of right.
Because they don't get the point.
So, continuing on, basically, yeah. So we meet...
So, yeah. First scene.
We meet Martin Freeman's character in his home, middle of nowhere, rural England. And he's making his breakfast. He seems very down on his life, down on his luck sort of guy. Definitely the kind of template of, oh, he feels so shameful, but also he's like, he's way too safe about his life. And he's not very adventurous. The average Britishman. And he is established to be friends for a long time with this man who he's just finding out now when he meets him at a pub is...
You're skipping a whole, like, scene, man.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. You're right. There's stuff that jumbles up. So, basically, Martin Freeman finds out his house is about to get bulldozed over.
Martin Freeman. It's Arthur Dent.
I'm going to keep calling him Martin Freeman. I'm sorry. I have to tell you this. So, Martin Freeman finds out his house is about to be bulldozed over. That's a part that's a big thing that I forgot to say.
He finds out because the demolition crew shows up at his doorstep. And exactly. So he lays in the mud in front of the bulldozer so that they cannot continue.
And it was when he started doing that I realized, oh, okay, so they are taking stuff from the original here and there, because I remember seeing that scene from the show when you showed me some clips. This is
I just keep wanting to bulldoze over you, no pun intended.
I get
But so Ford Prefect, or who we learned is Ford Prefect, is a old friend of Arthur's. He comes in with a whole fucking shopping cart of beer and peanuts. How the fuck?
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't notice.
So this is where it first departs from the book, is because there's this amazing silliness, and it's kind of more of a dry British humor as well, of how he gets Arthur to get out of the bulldozer's way and down to the pub for some drinks. And I always loved that scene because it's absolutely ridiculous. And they don't do that. They don't do the same thing that they do. So in this one, and we will get into what they do in the Shoot the Shit episode in the originals, because I don't want this to become a dual Night episode. He comes in with this huge thing of beer and peanuts, and he's like, well, to get Arthur to think that they're not going to knock his house down, he's just going to give beer to everybody. And they're like, oh yeah, we'll drink this beer. And of course, if they're drunk, they can't do anything, which of course they just do it anyway. It's one thing of beer. And so he gets them down to the pub for drinks. And you can continue.
Yeah, so and another thing I wanted to say about this scene before they quite get to the pub, something I noticed very early on, there are jokes in as the two are meeting up again, as Martin Freeman is laying down in front of the bulldozer, as he's saying, oh, I was about to tell you they were going to knock down your house. I noticed their jokes that were probably written by Brits that were directed to be delivered in an American comedy way. And it's a very square peg in a round hole situation. And so that's why it ends up looking as bad as it does.
But it isn't as good.
You can see where they were trying to go, and then you can see where, things went wrong. But anyway, they made it to the pub.
I also want to mention that the name of Ford is a joke, and they never acknowledge that.
Explain.
Because he just chooses. Okay, so it's there's that scene where he's talking about when Arthur first met Ford, and Ford was trying to say hi to a car, assuming them the dominant species. He chooses the name Ford Prefect because that's a car's name.
Oh my god! That's okay, that's a nice little detail.
And that's in the original source material.
I assumed that,
Don't fucking mention it. Like, as if his name was always Ford Prefect. And but, it's not like they were trying to save time. They did a whole extra scene of him almost getting hit by a car. Like, I don't get it.
So, we then go through finding out that the Ford breaks the news to Martin Freeman. That he's like, you're gonna have to get used to it, Ashley.
I can't, because I know the character is Arthur Dent.
So, I'm not gonna remember Arthur Dent, I promise you. So, Ford is breaking the news to Arthur that he is an alien from another planet, as you could probably suspect. And that he came to Earth, of course, everything Ashley just explained with the little flashback scene. And then they go through a bunch of very lazy feeling flashback scenes that establish things from Arthur's life. I almost said Martin again because I couldn't remember Arthur. And this is
this is another thing that pisses me off, but continue.
So there's a specific thing that pisses me off that goes throughout this movie that starts right here. And it's, they, of course, you fucking Americans, of course you had to add a cheap love plot in there.
Yeah, that's not in any of the other material.
I assumed not. Zooey Deschanel, you're a wonderful actress, and you're very lovely, but holy fucking shit, is that kind of plot not needed in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? And it's introduced right here, as you're introduced to this celebrity dude that's from another world, you know, in this flashback, and this is what sets up that plot. This is Zooey, he meets Zooey Deschanel. I'm going to call her Zooey because I don't fucking know her name in the movie.
Wait, you mean Trillian?
Is that her name?
Yeah, it's Trisha McMillan, but she goes by Trillian most of the...
So Trillian and Arthur met around places, don't remember where, but they were basically on a date under the stars
in costumes. They were at a costume party.
And they were at a date under the stars at this costume party. She wanted to go to Madagascar with him. You know, it's just like, fuck it, let's go on an adventure. And this, you know, of course, as his character is at the beginning, Arthur is like, oh, you know, a little timid about traveling like that. He's got a whole life to commit to over here. So it's like, can we travel to somewhere closer, maybe? I don't know. And then she's quite obviously disappointed. And then the, you know, most annoying character in the movie picks her up instead. And
yeah.
And that,
I was going to say the name, but we don't learn the name yet. So
yeah. And I don't remember. So
also, I want to say, so this scene that is in other media of Hitchhiker's Guide.
They did, I just assume it's better party. Done.
It's better done. It's also done later. It's explained later.
Okay.
And that is what makes the fucking difference, because this is going to turn into shoot the shit.
Okay. So yeah, so I just want to say, I mostly, like, we can briefly reference source material, but yeah, we just mostly have to say things related directly to this movie, just because we're judging this movie for the most part.
Well, the thing is I want to point out why it's a bad that they did it and how it can be done better, because it's been done better.
I feel like we...
That's why I specifically bring this up, because I'm not going to bring up other things I want to talk about on Shoot the Shit later, maybe only briefly, but... This one is, it could have been done so much better. So before another plot point happens, they show this. And also, the love arc really makes Arthur to be an asshole.
Yeah. They somehow did a worse love arc than Looney Tunes Back in Action.
This person that they meet for fucking like 2 hours or whatever, he falls in love with and just like obsesses over, which is fucking weird.
He's kind of incel-y.
Yeah, this scene in the radio drama, I believe, and the books happens later, and it's because when, this is going to be slightly a spoiler, but whatever, we're going to get into it, but when Arthur meets this person later, not Trish, the person that steals her away, it's supposed to be a shock that he knows them. But this one, you know he knows them because you've already seen it.
Yeah, they focus more on the love plot.
There's no reason to have that scene anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But because I don't have much to add to that, then basically he explains. Does Ford explain to him what's about to happen to the planet? I think he does.
Yes, and he also, I don't like how he says Vogon. Pisses me off.
Okay.
Because it's Vogon. He says Vogons.
So
and I hate that.
So then he does a bunch of wacky shit. He puts salted peanuts in his pockets as Arthur and him leave the pub, as you know, they're talking about everything about what he is and all that, and downing three fucking pints of stout.
Yeah.
And then they make their way back to Arthur's property, see that it's being bulldozed down anyway, and then whoop-dee-doo, Jesus Christ, the construction spaceship. People, they see in the sky a giant spaceship bigger than the Independence Day one, but of a similar fashion. And then Arthur eventually sees it as well. He's looking up. I think, okay, I just want to say, based on how much of a wonderful cast they added to this movie, it absolutely star-studded. I'm just like, this isn't a spoiler. You could look this shit up on IMDb, so I'm just going to say Martin Freeman, John Malkovich, Stephen Fry, Zoe Deschanel, Helen fucking Mirren. Need I go the fuck on? This had a pretty good cast.
That is the one thing I would take from it is
so,
the cast.
So I hawk up the, oh, and the British Bill Nye as well. I hawk up the performances largely then British to directing. Bill Nye. Yeah, the British Bill Nye.
Who were we talking about?
What?
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, if I'm to specify, that's going to be a spoiler for much later in the movie. So that's why anytime that there's a bad performance, most of the time I hawk it up to directing, because I know these people are capable of a lot better, and it had to have been the directing. So, Martin Freeman is directed to not be nearly as surprised as he should be. A giant ship in the sky. He looks mostly like there's just another piece of construction equipment that's been brought in. And then just frustration and anger that it's a big spaceship, which is kind of funny, but not really in character. And anyway, everything is I don't remember what happens in between that and then Ford saying we're gonna hitch a ride on that spaceship, and
it's basically the next thing.
Oh, okay. So he then raises his thumb into the air. Is that in the source material?
No, that's the one change that I truly love.
Yeah, that's fucking good shit.
Is because in the original source material, the I forget what it's called, the sub-ether something, communications device, is just shaped like a thumb. But this one is a ring that you put on your thumb, and you stick your thumb out to activate it to call for a hitchhike.
It's a wonderful sequence. I don't know why, I'm not exactly sure why they take so long to pick them up, but they do. And then the spaceship warns the entirety of planet Earth that of its impending fate. And by now it's revealed that Earth is about to be destroyed. And, of course, this part's kind of done well, where you see all the different major cities of the world reacting to it and screaming their fucking heads off because, of course, the planet's about to be destroyed and everyone on it.
Yeah.
And then you had one job movie, and it was to do a decent chung, 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 chung shot all the way up to the perspective of Earth surrounded by the ships. And the second half of it's done okay. The first half just looks like they're trying to zoom their way up the giant ship. And, well, one of the giant ships.
I quite like that, because it shows how huge they are.
No.
And then you're like, oh, this is a huge fucking ship. And then it zooms out further. It's like, oh, it's a lot of these.
No, I would have been okay with the zooming up shot. That's not what I had a problem with. The part I had a problem with was the fact that they slowly chung, 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 chung their way up the thing. And it, to me at least, just looked like, oh, do I have a low frame rate for some reason? Or, oh no, that's just the shot. What? So I just think that specific part of the shot was very badly done to me.
As much as it hurts me to defend this movie, I like that because how it's done is it's supposed to be like just doom, doom, doom of like how huge is this fucking thing? And then it pauses before it zooms out fully. So you get to see the first thing. It pauses. So you're like, oh, well, that your mind subconsciously is like, that's the end of it. And then it continues. And I think that is the purpose of that is to be like, ha, fuck you. It's not just one ship. Which just, is like, I think that's good.
The part
that it was done fairly well. I just think the rest of the movie makes it look worse.
The part that I really had a problem with, and I think if the rest of the movie was fine, I still would have had a problem with this specific part, is as they were going up the wall of the thing, the chung, 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 chung ladder style all the way up, it just felt like a technical glitch almost, in my opinion, that specific part of it.
No, I'm going to disagree on that one, but that's the only time you'll see me defending this film.
I have a couple places to defend it. And you see Earth is destroyed. I'm glad they at least had the guts to do that. I know it's a basic plot point, but frankly, I'm grasping at anything I can find in this movie to be okay with. Because
they didn't destroy the Earth. Well, later on, pisses me off what they do later. But if they didn't destroy the Earth at first, like, what would be the inciting action for the plot? And so, also, like,
yeah.
It also has to keep the joke of, like, oh, Arthur Dent's house was knocked down for a bypass, and then when the Earth is knocked down for a bypass, everyone was so fucking upset.
Oh, I didn't even notice that parallel. But anyway, then they're hitchhiked onto the ship. I don't know how to, like, they're beamed up, I guess, so to speak. And
this is also part of the movie that makes sense in the source material and doesn't make sense in this.
So there is not one ship interior in this movie that doesn't look so unbearably bland. And like in the first ship that they're in right now, I can't even tell apart rooms, if I'm being honest, besides that one open one where people are standing around because they have landmarks of aliens standing around. And that's about it. And granted, maybe they're just a boring species, but there's better ways to convey that. And,
Well, they are a boring species because they're all bureaucrats. I think that's explained pretty well as to why they're rather drab.
But also,
damn it, stop making me defend this film. Well, Fuck you. Absolutely hate you right now. This goes against every moral in my body. But I want to expound because I said this part doesn't make any fucking sense. And what I mean by that
/, this movie did nothing wrong.
What I mean by it doesn't make sense is, not to mention the source material, but this is how I'm going to have to explain this. They hitchhike onto it, and the reason that they know that they are going to get on there is because there's this, like, another species on the ship that hate Vogons and know that the Vogons hate hitchhikers, so they let them on.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And they don't do that in the movie. There's no reason why they should have gotten onto that ship.
Absolutely zero.
I
just assumed there was something I was missing.
No, there was something you're missing, which also apparently the director's missed.
So
to blame the director for the shitty writing.
So now Martin Freeman, Arthur has the Hitchhiker's Guide in his hand. It's a little like display thing. It's a little bit like a sideways DS. That's not bad. I like the design of it.
Yeah, that design's not bad.
And also, this movie throughout has nice animation, and that is my one weak spot for a movie. I will always defend animation, because, like, especially when it's done well, because I love animation so much. You guys know that. But yeah, they don't skimp out on the animation. They do several different styles throughout this movie, and it is all at least done okay, if not great.
Yeah.
Then a bunch of talking happens that kind of just blended together in my head. And so
Arthur learns about the Vogons, I believe, first, and their Hitchhiker's Guide entry plays. And then the Vogon leader, I forget what they're called, in this, like the captain,
King
of the ship or whatever.
That's a joke.
Comes on the loudspeaker. And of course, Arthur can't understand because he's speaking Vogon. And so Ford puts this little fish in his ear that allows him to hear everything, which is called the Babel fish, and that if you didn't put it in the movie, would have been an actual federal crime. You would have been sentenced to death for that.
That would have been on par with if you didn't do the earth destroying thing. That's
yeah. You would have missed the entire point of which, get into it later. They do miss the entire point, but anyway.
I can't tell if you want me to continue or if you're drinking.
I'm getting a tic tac.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, he gets all this information shoved down his throat, and I'm pretty sure they're just found basically right. Immediately.
Yeah, they're put in prison.
I should stop eating a tic tac while recording it.
Yeah, no, yeah, you should. Especially since you crunch them so soon. Then
I move away from the mic to crunch.
Oh, okay, well that's fair. They are then put in like a prison thingy, and they make a decent joke about, oh no, wait, there's gotta be a way out. Then they try cranking something, it's like, nope, we're dead. And so like
you're missing the Vogon poetry. I'm gonna need to tell this whole fucking story because you miss everything.
Wait. I didn't forget about the Vogon poetry. I just thought it was after this part.
Okay, wait. You're talking about when they get ejected into space.
No. Oh, because my... Okay, so the way I remembered it was they were thrown into prison and then punished by, like, via the poetry.
No, they get caught, which... We should describe the Vogons as well. They're
basically the Jadoon from the Doctor Who.
The old style... They're, for anybody who doesn't know that, which is probably a lot of people, they are every political cartoon capitalist and bureaucrat. They have this hunched back. Their noses are all stuffed up into their faces. They have these jowls. Just dead on bureaucrat.
They're not human shape, though, which you're making it sound like they are.
Well... I presume that people that know old, like these political cartoons, know that they are monstrously huge, but at their core, they have these human-like attributes to them. They're just hugely hunched back, their nose is shoved up, they have these jowls, and their arms are super fucking tiny and weak.
But yeah, so they're subjected to what, by the way, Stephen Fry is the one who narrates The Hitchhiker's Guide, which... If you're going to give any credit to this movie, that was a fantastic choice, and he does a wonderful job with that. Yes. And as far as I know, they're pretty accurate to how they're put in the original source material in there.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah. So credit there. But yeah, it's already established by this point that you're not supposed to let these creatures, these aliens, read poetry to you under any circumstances. That is the specific thing. And so... Their punishment is being read poetry to, and they're strapped to it through an unbearably long-lasting joke of Ford making funny faces as he's being tortured by the poetry, whereas Arthur is for some reason barely affected by it for reasons that I couldn't quite catch.
The reason for that is in the guide entry for Vogons, they mention that they're the third worst in the galaxy for poetry.
Right.
And they say the second one, and the number one worst poetry is from some lady in Essex. So I think what they were going for is he's from where the worst poetry in the universe is.
Oh, I see.
So comparatively... It's fine.
So. I didn't even catch that. Okay, that's pretty. Okay.
Yeah. It's not in the original, but I do actually kind of like that.
That's another original. That's another point for this movie, regrettably. we're gonna come out at the end of this going, you know what, maybe the movie wasn't that bad.
No, because it's about to get into its own story, and its own story is shit.
By the way, also another thing that I'll probably forget to say later.
Like Stephen Moffat makes good episodes, but is a horrible showrunner.
It's true. So I should say, the first third to half of this movie is so... breathtakingly slow when it comes to getting to any sort of galaxy shit or plot to speak of. So
that's the British in it.
like, and I'm not saying that's inherently a bad thing, but for an under 2 hour movie that's not supposed to have any sequels, that's precious time for a guide to the galaxy.
If it was better, it could have easily gotten sequels.
Yeah, but I'm saying for a solo movie, which I'm not sure this was even supposed to get sequels. There's no way. Or
I don't see why they want it.
Oh, wait, no. Actually,
if it did
well,
I don't see why they want to do a sequel.
Actually, no, you got a point. But even, like,
because they don't even really cover the full first book.
I would say it's pretty reckless, at least, to not make more room for hitchhiking the galaxy, for exploring the galaxy in this and making better use of their time.
The book only goes to one planet in the first book.
Okay.
So I will stop making me fucking defend this movie. I will say that if you wanted going around the universe, that's much more of the later books. The first book is just to go through an arc with the Earth.
I know that the writers themselves couldn't inherently tell this, like, because that would take third person perspective, but that's something that I'm willing to trust in the original writers, not in these guys to handle. And so that's why I said this movie could have benefited from a lot more hopping across the universe, because I feel like if they got to explore more of that, maybe this would have been a little more tolerable. But
no, I think if they did more of that, they would have lost the plot even more, because as it stands, most of the original book's plot isn't even there, and a lot of their own is, for some reason, they really want Zaphod, and I don't know why.
I don't even remember what Zaphod is the name of, but
Zaphod Beeblebrox? Like, one of the main goddamn characters?
Like, I don't know names very well, is the thing.
The two-headed.
Oh, okay, there we go. Then, after the poetry, they're ejected. They're ejected into space and caught by, well, Zaphod. That's his name, yes. Zaphod. I just have, in my notes, I'm not even looking at my notes right now. I had him as the celebrity dude.
They were caught by, he's the president of the galaxy. That's just funny to me. The celebrity dude is so undercutting his ego, which is so funny because his ego is so big.
The thing is, I barely wanted to listen to a word he said, because he is legitimately one of the most annoying characters in the entirety of the 2000s.
Yeah, he's completely insufferable.
And when I say one of the most annoying characters of the 2000s, think of all the movies you know, all the comedies you know for the 2000s. I make no exaggeration when I say that. Anyway, Zaphod, on his ship with Trillian, you know, they pick them up. And I don't even remember why they pick them up.
Well, Trillian does it because they happen to be there. Because by happenstance of how the ship is powered, they happened to be everywhere. So the ship, to explain that, is the Heart of Gold, which uses what is in universe an infinite improbability engine, which gives them the power to basically do anything as long as there is a probability of it happening. They just have to punch it in correctly. So when it flies, it basically goes through every point in every universe, because that is probable, just very unlikely. And so they happened to be by them, and they were just like, oh yeah, we'll pick them up, because we don't just want people to die.
And then there's a whole bunch of filler that happens, and then it's like, oh!
Before we move on, there's a bit in it that I really fucking love.
Okay.
Zaphod is watching the news of the reporting of him stealing this ship, which shows you his ego, because he's not watching it like, oh shit, or like any seriousness. He's just like, yeah, I'm on TV again. And Trillian says, was talking to him, and he didn't hear or whatever. And she's like, there's something more important than your ego. And he turns around and says, if there's something more important than my ego, I want it round up and shot.
I do remember that. Yeah.
Which is, that's from the original. And I love it.
Yeah, there's a few quotes in here that I like that I just, you'll have to tell me if they're from the original or not. And
they probably are.
Yeah, they probably. One's near the end, I'll say that. And yeah, again, a bunch of filler happens. And then they eventually, there might have been something that happened just before this, but they eventually get to the whole big machine that says the, like, anybody on the internet's probably heard this in some way, shape, or form. But the whole answer to the life, the universe, and everything, you know, they find out about, like, you know, they were introduced to the machine, to the big machine that answers the one question above all, and it's that one. And the answer so is...
to give more context to this before we say any more, is, and I love that I stopped you right as you were about to say the answer.
I know. Let's just stop the episode right here for good. Let's shut up.
To give more context,
you have to watch the movie. Jesus Christ, what fate worse than death?
We would never do that to you, lovely people. Watch the TV show, listen to the radio show, read
which
the books,
still
anything
reveal,
else.
Which still reveals the answer to that question. So please do. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
So there's this ancient civilization called Magrathea. And in the original, it's like this mythical legend that nobody knows if it really exists or not because that's how old it is. And they got tired of the bickering about what's the answer to life, what you should be doing, whatever. So they built a computer big enough to just calculate it.
Which the look of the computer is pretty good.
I'm okay with that. And it has to calculate it for like 7.5 billion years. And of course, because it's a movie, they cut out some of the most amazing jokes about this.
And another good casting thing, Helen Mirren is the computer. Fucking beautiful. Yes.
And so the computer starts computing. I'm going to put that on a shirt. and for 7.5 billion, or was it million? I don't know. It was a really million, 7.5 million years. And so they come back to this computer and it says, oh, you're not going to like the answer. And the answer is, of course, 42, as everyone knows. It's the one thing about Hitchhiker's Guide everyone fucking knows.
Of course, yeah.
Which is a travesty because it's such a small thing.
It's
in the grand scheme of things.
It's a wonderful little funny thing, though.
It's a good joke.
I mean,
but holy shit, it happens once, guys.
I mean, Luke, I am your father isn't the only thing you should know about Star Wars. It's a fantastic franchise. Like, that's not the only franchise it happens to that's great.
Yeah, but I don't care about Star Wars. Okay. I mean, it's just that isn't even, like, the funniest joke in the first book. That's what gets to me, is like there's so much more to appreciate, even just in comedy, about the series, and that's the only thing everyone knows, the one that they probably don't fucking get the actual joke to, because they just know that it is 42, not any of the surrounding context. And it makes me upset, it makes me sad.
I think it's because that's like, I think a lot of the reason that's the one thing like everybody knows is because... a lot of stuff from Hitchhiker's Guide, and this is not a slight against it in any way, shape, or form, a lot of Hitchhiker's Guide is stuff that at least to me, feels like stuff that you don't inherently have grapple to as a human being, and you have to be along for the ride, you have to be open to things that relate to things that you can relate to, but aren't, like, go into very ridiculous abstract places, and it's well done. It's very well done. But the answer and meaning to life, the universe, and everything is something everybody has thought of. Everybody's asked that question. Everybody's wondered the answer. Well, and so
the other part of the joke is that there isn't a question.
I get that, but the fact that the
that's
joke...
also what bugs me about people... is because they'll just say it in reference to any question, which it's made such a point of that you can't just attribute it to any question. Right. It is the answer to the question, which we don't know the question. We only know the answer. And it's also in the original source material. And I know I keep bringing it up, and I said I wasn't going to do it as much. It is postured that if anyone were to know the question and the answer at the same time, the universe would just reset. And that's not a hard fact of the universe. That's just what people, a lot of the point of Hitchhiker's Guide is you're not going to know everything. Deal with it. So
I get why that's, I do see that as a well, like that's, I can respect that as a good piece of fiction. But that doesn't satisfy me, even as a story, like even as the message it's trying to send, that just personally for my taste.
Well, the whole moral isn't that. It's the foundation.
Right.
Which I think a lot of stories miss that now because they have a need to explain everything when in real life you're not going to get that. And sometimes it's much more satisfying to not have the definitive answer.
Yeah, but, well, okay, so that's a, so, okay, this is, there's a thing I had to say about that, but that goes into territory that I would prefer to cover much later on while we're done with this story, because that goes into a whole thing that is just about film.
Yeah, and we're still in the fucking beginning, so yeah. I might take the reins on saying the story so that we can continue a bit faster.
Okay, sorry, my bad.
But yes, what are you going to say?
No. This is something I should leave to the end because it's a little more okay. of like a big thing.
So they get saved and they go through this scene, which this is how the improbability drive works, is it'll do just a bunch of random shit while getting you what you wanted. So they get on the ship, but they figure out like, hey, wait, we're sofas. And so it takes time for normality to set back in, for them to turn normal, which is one of my favorite parts of The Heart of Gold. Is just the wacky shit that the writers can come up with that they don't have to explain because it's infinite improbability. But Trillian and Zaphod, whatever, send Marvin, this robot little dude. He's not as little as I remembered him. He's a bit taller, but he's definitely not designed to look tall.
Yeah, I remembered him being the height of where your knees would be. I didn't
think of him that. The very tip top of his head is almost a normal height, but I thought he was like a few inches shorter.
I could not tell you why I remembered it like this, but I thought he was at tallest waist height. I don't know why, but that's where my head went,
he's designed like a Funko Pop. That's why.
I was like, oh shit, he's a tall boy. Okay.
So he's sent down. Another thing about this robot, Marvin, is he's manically depressed, which is an oxymoron, and I love that. So he's sent down to get them.
Alan Rickman, wonderful.
Gags and mischief happen. And he brings them back up to the bridge where Arthur and Trillian meet again. And romance starts blooming.
Ish.
And we find out that Zaphod wants to go to Magrathea to get rich and famous, more so than he already is. Find out the question to the answer of the universe, which is another departure from the original source material. I'm not going to get into what is. I'm just going to tell you when it departs.
Yeah, you'll have to listen to the Shoot the Shit for all the places we branch off to.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be really, wouldn't it be really funny if the Shoot the Shit was a commentary track for this episode of Shoot the Shit? I mean, Ash and Steve Movie Day.
So at the same time that this is all happening, whatever council is the president of the galaxy's council or whatever, sends the Vogon fleets to get the president back because, like, officially he kidnapped himself. And that's a running bit throughout the entire thing. So the Vogons catch up and they just hyperspace towards... Well, they were just trying to get to Magrathea. They didn't know where they were going just yet.
Also, another fun thing. Another fun thing about this movie is when they travel places, the ship, I think you alluded to this with the probability machine, but it turns into a whole bunch of random shit before it warps anywhere, or warps, so to speak.
And after.
And
it's
after.
Just like during the warp, it just changes constantly.
And I just think that is so beautifully fun. And I don't know if, is that a thing in the Sourcement show?
Not every time it goes places. Just like when it does things that it wasn't pre-programmed to do.
Okay.
So it'll just do random shit. If you just put a random number into it, it'll just do random shit. There's a bit more control over it in the source material. So they make this detour to a planet that has Zaphod's old, his like rival in the presidential campaign. And this guy has the codes or the coordinates to Magrathea. Why he doesn't go there, I don't know. They never really explain that.
Is he the religious dude?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to mention that because that's mostly just a gag.
Okay, well, I mean, that's like a whole scene in the movie where they're at, like, the church
thing. But that entire scene is a gag. Nothing comes of it.
I know, it's just I thought it was worth mentioning also because I know it's a gag, but it being there with nothing to conflict with it kind of pissed me off, only because there's a strong anti-religion message to the original Hitchhikers, and so it kind of seemed, if to me it felt like a middle finger in the face of that, to have it as a, like an uncontradicted gag. But yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I do tend to agree, but I don't know, mixed feelings on that. I just think the scene's completely useless, and that's why I hate it. It makes no difference in the film.
It does have one use. Like the guy, when they're talking in the dude's quarters, after, you know, as they're talking about what they're doing going forward, he cuts off the second head.
No, I'm saying the scene of him being this religious figure. He could have not been a religious figure and done that.
That's fair, I guess. Yeah, they could have cut out like the big wide open church. Although I do like the sneeze gag, but that could have been done much better if they just leaned into it being British comedy, because they would have delivered it better.
Yeah. So Zaphod wants the codes or the coordinates to Magrathea. This dude is like, hey, I'll give it to you if you bring back a gun that is on Magrathea to me. And he was like, well, to make sure that you do it, I want collateral. And he takes Zaphod's second head, which I don't think we mentioned fully. But yeah, he has a second head under his chin. Not my favorite design decision.
It's a well done effect, though, for what they intended to do.
Yeah, it's a decently well done effect. There's scenes. Okay, so he also has a third arm that is used twice. And I noticed that arm is edited in, even though the scenes where it's used, you could have easily had somebody off camera holding their arm up through his shirt. Like, you didn't need to edit that in. You could have just had a dude.
It'd be really funny if they filmed it completely forgetting that was a part of it, and then just like, shit, can you add it in post or something?
So fucking stupid. I don't know why they chose to do that, and it looks bad too. Like, if you actually look at it, it looks bad. Anyway, so he takes Zaphod's second head, which his intelligence is split between them, so he becomes even more stupid than he already is,
if that's possible.
It definitely was. It sets up for a gag later in the film, which I'm not super against, but it does reek of random for the sake of random. So they get the codes to Magrathea, but on their way out, they're caught by the Vogons, and only Trillian is captured. So they get back on the Heart of Gold, Arthur, Ford, and Zaphod. Don't leave that pause in, please, for my own dignity. Don't leave that pause in.
Can I look at can I take it out and leave in you saying
that? Yeah, you can take it out and leave me saying that. I don't want them to know how long that was. So those three get onto the ship, and they The navigation system has been chewed out by Trillian's pet mice, which we see randomly throughout the movie, just like crawling around the Heart of Gold. So they use an escape pod from the ship to chase the Vogon fleet and rescue Trillian. So they land on... what's the planet called? The Vogonosphere or something?
I think I fucking know.
Or Vogue Sphere. Something like that. It's Vogon and Sphere the mashed vague together sphere. Somehow. And this is one thing I really liked from the movie as well, is whenever...
What are
well,
you?
Well, they're walking through on this planet, and every now and then something will spring up from the ground and slap them in the face.
Yeah, I would have liked that if the rest of the movie didn't reek of slapstick and random for the sake of random stuff.
This isn't random.
It felt too similar to that stuff because of the presence of the other stuff. Like, it was slotted next to it to me.
I like this. I wouldn't want this in the source material because the Vogons are very, like, they're not very different. They're still bureaucratic, but they're not the same. But every time you think of an idea or something like that, you have a thought, it smacks you in the face. And that seems so fucking random and for no reason until you pair it together with, oh, the Vogon's noses are scrunched up after fucking millennia of getting slapped by these things.
Oh my god.
They're so brain dead and bureaucratic because they can't have new ideas without getting slapped.
Okay.
And that is fucking good.
How the fuck did you add such a good layer to this movie? Or how the fuck did they and you just point it out?
Because a lot of this was written by Douglas Adams. And he is good, but he wants every version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to be slightly different. And this one was very different. I don't know why he did it.
And I admire...
I hate that without watching the film, the way we're going to describe it is... It sounds good. And that's because at the core, Hitchhiker's Guide is good.
It's, yeah, because, like,
it's we're, the keep execution in mind, of these things.
We're generalizing that ruins it. We're generalizing and distilling this down to bare minimum acceptable parts, and then just describing the shit we don't like because it's painful to remember. But trust us when we say this movie is not nearly as good as we make it sound, and it is a snooze fest to get through. Like, stuff that takes us
five. If you think it is good, and.
If you enjoy it, then enjoy it.
Then no, shut the fuck up. So if you genuinely enjoy it, I beg of you to read, listen to, or watch any other Hitchhiker's Guide media, because it does it a million times better.
Right.
This is a 6-year-old's retelling of Hitchhiker's Guide.
And
imagine what an adult can do.
And keep firmly in mind, if you've never seen this and this is how you're first witnessing it, all the parts that are, like, take forever to get through and you're just waiting through when you watch it because this and that, very not well, done very much not well, any way to phrase that, takes us just 5 minutes to say here, if that. And so you get to breeze through.
We're also zooming. Yeah, we're zooming through it because the Vogons are not a good antagonist. Also, I don't know why they dressed them up in gimp suits. What the fuck was
that? Yeah, I was fucking wondering about that. Why the fuck is there a gimp suit in this?
What the actual shit are they doing in gimp suits? I'm assuming it's some metaphor for bureaucracy, but I don't get it. It's probably a little bit too British for me. Anyway.
So anyway, yeah, so we just left off at the slapping monsters.
So yes, they slap them whenever they have an idea, and that is decent world building. And they go into this queue to get like papers signed and whatnot to try to get Trillian released from prison. And there's another funny bit about Arthur being like, oh, I'll deal with this. I'm British. We know how to queue, which I like. But they storm through the line because, of course, Zaphod is the president of the galaxy. So he just kind of gets to skip. And they go up and ask for them to be released. But of course, bureaucracy is bureaucracy, and they need the forms to be signed and managed well. There's this whole scene of like Trillians getting about to be punished for her crime of kidnapping the president, which is what they're charging her with, as they're like signing these documents. And they finally get them signed. They give them to the Vogon. They're like, all right, prisoner release forms. Oh, wait, she's in for kidnapping the president. They can't get let out. But yes, what's a quick note?
I don't know if this is something that happens anywhere else, but it felt pretty weird to me that Arthur was, sorry, I'm very willing to keep in my pauses before saying Arthur, because Martin Freeman, but Arthur was just able to go to the site and grab a presidential release form, which in our world is like on Earth over here is what I would assume would be in the office of said president. And so that was a bit weird to me.
I think that's just a joke of how stupidly bureaucratic they are, that they just leave everything everywhere.
I guess that, yeah, figures.
So we've just spoiled a joke. But they said, oh, they can't be released from normal forms because of the severity of their crime. Yeah, it has to be a presidential release form. And so they go and do that, and like right before Trillian's going to die, they stamp it and they're like, oh, wait, they're free to go, and just let them go. So they leave the Vogon sphere, Vogue sphere, whatever, the Vogon planet. And for some reason, they're still like hunting down Zaphod. I don't fully know why. I guess it's because they want the ship, but whatever. They don't act like it's because they want the ship. They put in the coordinates for Magrathea. They use the infinite probability drive to get there instantly. And they're going down and they get a message that Magrathea is closed. Which is an amazing bit.
I like when when my brain glosses over something funny that I then get to hear delivered by someone better at it.
I will say most of this part is pretty accurate to the source material, so it's just like this very dry, bland, like, oh, hello, we're closed.
Oh, there's a joke.
We appreciate your interest in the business, but we are currently closed. Come back another time.
There's a joke here that is one of the ones that genuinely made me laugh that I don't want to spoil, but it is when Zaphod, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
Zaphod is talking to the giant machine. Something that Helen... Okay, I'm gonna approach.
Wait, yeah, we're nowhere near that yet. We're nowhere near that.
Really? Okay.
We're getting to it, but there's still multiple scenes.
Okay.
So they continue down towards the planet, and the next message is, while we appreciate your enthusiasm for our business, we are most definitely closed, and as a consolation, we hope you enjoy these two thermonuclear missiles we've sent at you. Which, that is delivered in the original source material better, but... So they're evading this thing, and for some reason, autopilot isn't working, so they have to do it manually or whatever. And Arthur has the idea of, like, why don't we just press the improbability drive button? They're like, well, we haven't calibrated it. It could literally do anything, and so he presses it anyway. Because what's the alternative? And at first, everything seems fine. The missiles seem to have disappeared, but they turned into a bowl of petunias and a blue whale.
Oh, that part was here. Okay.
Yeah, that's when they're getting to Magrathea, which that's another deviation from the source material. Anyway, that I'm not going to mention here. Listen to Shoot the Shit. So there's a whole scene about how this whale is coming to terms with its identity before it crashes into the ground and dies.
Yeah.
Which is one of the most famous scenes. Oh, we forget the beginning musical.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, right.
Fuck that. And then we're not going to talk about it anymore. Fuck that, and we're not going to talk about it anymore.
Really? Because so, I thought that was quite...
No, we're not talking about it anymore.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And so it goes through this entire scene of what this whale thought before it died. And then it's like, strangely, the only thing the Bowl of Petunias thought was, oh, no, not again. Which is one of... If 42 wasn't the famous thing from the series, that would be the famous thing from the series, is that bowl of petunias. So anyway, they're safe. They go land on Magrathea and they find these like seemingly teleportation tunnels. And Zaphod, Trillian, and Ford, don't put that pause in. That was so embarrassing of a pause.
And, but so and listener, three... you will never know which one the pause was before.
So yeah, they go through this teleporter and end up on the other side where they are at Deep Thought, the computer that figured out the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Or the question of life, the universe, and everything. And Arthur and Marvin are left behind. So I'm trying to decide which one to tell first. I'm going to tell Arthur's side first. Because yeah, he's happening in unison. They
flip-flop between.
So Arthur gets approached by this man who is an ancient Magrathean.
Oh, okay. This is getting to a... I'm not jumping forward or anything. I'm just vaguely saying... this part is getting to a part that I like that I'm not sure fits this story very well, but I would have loved to see in something else.
So, yeah, this man comes up and he's like, you must come with me or else you'll be late. And the Arthur says, late for what? And he's like, no, I mean, like the late Arthur Dent, like you'll die. And he's like, why should I trust you? I don't even know your name. Arthur's like, who are you? And he's like, my name's not important. He's like, how am I supposed to trust somebody that I don't know the name of? And he's like, fine, my name's Slarty Bartfast. I told you it wasn't important. Which I really like that bit. It's done better in the other material. Still hits.
If this was a video, I would put a counter in the corner for how many times Ashley says it's done better in the source material.
The subtitle of this episode is done better in the source material. So he takes Arthur through the like underground of Magrathea, which you learn is this planet sized factory that makes other planets.
I fucking loved this part. And,
yeah, I love the spectacle of it. I don't like what they've eventually did with it inside of the plot.
It's visually amazing.
So yeah, you and see them idea. Zooming through what is the factory floor, where there's just other planets being built all around them. Another thing that's different from the source material. But they zoom through and then they reach Earth. And now is when I'm going to tell Ford, Trillian, and Zaphod's side of the story, because they're about to converge. So they go through this teleportation tunnel, and on the other side they go to Deep Thought and ask it what the question is, because at this point they didn't know that it couldn't calculate it. And they're like, no, I don't know it. I built another computer to do that. We forgot to mention that it was going to find out the question, but whatever.
Yeah.
It was going to find out the question to the answer of life, the universe, and everything. And we find out that it was making another computer to do that. And we find out it's Earth. Earth is the computer that was figuring out what the question was. And then a door opens and it leads to the gun that this the like cult leader or whatever the religious dude wanted. Which is a gun of point of view. So if you shoot it at somebody, they see things from your point of view. And that is important for the climax. Sex joke.
And it's a pretty fun idea for a gun as well.
I do love that idea.
I enjoyed the implications of it. Yeah,
There's another similar thing in one of the later books, which I'm just going to spoil or whatever. And it's called the... what is it called? Well, whatever it is, you get put into this machine and you basically see the entirety of the universe and then a dot that says you are here. And that basically wrecks your mind because no living thing was meant to comprehend the entirety of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And in the original story, I think it was made because a dude's wife told him to get some perspective.
Jesus Christ.
So he's like, what better perspective than this? I genuinely, the books are amazing. Please read them. except for the last book. Fuck the last book.
Absolutely. Go read
the last two books. Fuck the last two books.
How many books are there?
So the original series is five. I almost said the original trilogy is five because that's how they market it. It's a five-part trilogy.
Do they say trilogy? I don't know why they market it.
No, because okay, so read the first four. Then Douglas Adams wrote a fifth book, which I don't particularly like. And then another person wrote a sixth book.
I see.
And I've never read that one, but if it has to continue from the fifth book, I don't care.
Oh, okay.
The fifth book, I genuinely dislike it because it does something that this movie does.
Wouldn't it be amazing if the sixth book was a perfect, like, if this movie was a perfect adaptation of the sixth book, like, to the letter?
No, it would be partially an adaptation of the fifth book, because the fifth book does something that this movie does, and I really dislike it for that.
Okay.
And I know you're going to like it.
All right. Well, anyway, now I feel antagonized.
You are. You are being antagonized. Anyway, so they get this point of view gun, and then they see these, another door opens up, and they see the little mice that were on the Heart of Gold earlier, and they get attacked by them, and you figure out that mice were the ones that commissioned the Earth from Magrathea. Right.
Oh my god.
Which I absolutely love that.
Same here.
They're like fifth dimensional beings or something. I don't think they say that in the movie, but I think that's in the books. I think they just say they're like extra dimensional in this. But Arthur and Slarty Bartfast get onto Earth, and it's an exact replica. They're rebuilding Earth.
Which,
and
I do want to say, despite all of what I feel like I know you're about to, like you're going to say soon about it, and I don't entirely disagree with that, I will say the whole sequence of like him being shown how, okay, because I don't know if you want to get to this part. I don't know if you got to this part quite yet. Are we continuing from like the guy that was showing the planet factory?
Yes.
Okay. So I can't say this part. So they just landed on Earth. So as he's being shown Earth being built, is a sequence, it's one of the only sequences in this entire movie that since the first time I saw it years ago, I've actually remembered up until now. Like him being, like him saying, you know, oh, the oceans are just being poured in now. And, you know, and seeing people paint the colors onto the fucking rock sides and deserts and shit. It is a really creative and wonderful sequence, in my opinion. No matter what you feel about, you know, the concept that it contributes to the film, it's a beautiful sequence, and I think that would fit great in something.
Yeah, no, I love that sequence, and I think it could have stayed in the movie if they changed one thing.
Okay.
But we'll get to that later. It could have stayed in the movie and not cheapened it if they did one thing. They land on Earth exactly outside of where Arthur's home is. As they're rebuilding it, and he goes inside, and there's this huge feast thrown by the mice, who then say that they need Arthur's brain because he's like one of the last remnants of the supercomputer that was Earth, and it was about to give the question. So they're like, hey, it's probably done in you, so we need your brain to get it. And so they're going to cut his brain open, and this is really shortening this scene. The scene goes on for a long time.
Arthur
breaks out, squishes the mice. But what were you about to say?
The thing is, the scene is overly long, and it's not great, but it did feel like a reward for getting through the rest of this movie that, as we've said before, is worse than we make it sound. And so I'm like, I know this isn't great, but I'm like, you know what? As just some stupid fun shit that's just so neatly tied together and so, like, at such a little bow of, here you go, here's a little something. I can appreciate it for that, but I also know that's the wrong reason to appreciate a scene in a movie, because I appreciate it despite the movie.
Yeah, it's not very good. But he breaks out, squishes the mice, who then return to their, like, original forms from earlier in the movie. It's weird, and it's only in this. It's not in the source material. And then they get out after they hear that the Vogons are now there. Somehow the Vogons know where Magrathea is. And so they're there to capture the president again. There's this huge fight scene, and basically the most you need to know about it is at the very end of the fight scene, Marvin picks up the point of view gun and shoots all of the Vogons, which gives them the perspective of this hyper intelligent, manically depressed robot. And so they all fall over saying they're so depressed, blah, 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 blah. Which is funny. It's decent, I guess, but
it also kind of felt visceral. The film is
so bad.
It kind of feels emotionally brutal, though, because I'm like, I get it's like a funny bit and you're not supposed to think too far into it, but just imagining like what's going on in their head, I'm like, damn, like I would almost rather they just died rather than having to go through that.
Yeah, if they did Marvin a little better in this movie, I would have felt that way. But I'm like, this Marvin doesn't even show that he's so fucking upset all the time. Like, he just mentions it. It's whatever. So, boom, day is saved, Vogon's gone, and Slarty Barfast comes up to Arthur being like, hey, since the mice are dead, but we're, like, so close to finishing this project, we're just gonna finish it? Do you want anything changed? And Arthur's like, the only thing I want gone is me. I'm not going to stay on Earth. This is where my problem with it comes in, is if after the mice died, Arthur shouldn't get the choice to not be on this Earth, it should be forced on him, because that is what the series is about. It's about the universe pushes you in a way and you have marginal control over it. And you have to make the best out of what you have.
Wow, I am actually really surprised that you say that. And I even more disagree with that than what I originally thought you were going to say.
What?
So, I thought that the fact of Earth, that Earth being gone, the one that fucking got destroyed earlier in the movie, this is a backup. This is a backup of it. Basically, I thought that the thing you had a problem with was going to be that, like, they didn't just leave Earth destroyed and with no, you know, ability to come back, which I could see a value to that. And I see a value to what you're saying now. It's just not
what I want. I think it would have been amazing if, like, they all had this celebration and then Slarty Barfast was just like, well, wrap it up. We're going to tear this thing down to use its materials for another paying customer. That is what I would have wanted, because that is how, it's not pessimism, but it comes off of the series, is the universe is pushing you in a way, make the best of it. And nothing's going to come out exactly how you want it. And that is why I hate the happy ending of this movie, is because that's not what it's about.
And this is something you largely know about me, but I'm gonna say outright, put this for the listener. I respect when an ending like the one that you clearly would have preferred, I respect when that's necessary for a story and when that makes more sense and when it's used. I respect that is, you know, it is a valid thing to have in a movie, and there is a cause for it, and it's a good move when warranted. But also, because of, and referring to something you said earlier, because we have reached the end, this is the end. So, I mean, I'm just going to say this next, like, part that has longer implications. The part where you said you don't always get answers in life, and that's what it's like, a certain parts of Hitchhikers are referencing, or at least that's a lot of what, a general Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is about. But the thing is, although I respect that that's a thing, I get and understand and respect that that's a thing of real life, and again, like I said, I respect it in fiction, that isn't what I go to fiction for. I go to fiction for things that I can't find in real life, and what I can't find very much of in real life is those kind of answers, and stories that can be more complete. Because, of course, in real life, there's no high five in the air, freeze frame, happy endings. So that's what I go to. Like, that's not all of it. Like, I can take it. Like, I like a compelling story where things go wrong, you know, and where it leaves you shit to think about, like we referenced in the earlier movie night. If you're listening to this much, much later, I'm referencing It Comes at Night, the one we previously did. But yeah, it's like, I especially after, and I know that this was made long before it, quite obviously, this movie, but especially after something like the COVID-19 pandemic, which we're still not quite out of, but you get my point. It's like, what I go to these things for is an escape from those ideas, not because I need to run away from them, but because I need a break from them sometimes. And that's what I go to fiction for. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand your perspective. I mean, yeah, I've heard it before. So yes, I do know what you
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I shouldn't have asked.
That's
if
you why know I knew you would disagree with right. me. That's exactly why. But the message of Hitchhiker's Guide, much like realistic Hitchhiker's Guides, because they're built on a foundation of you don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just going to have to make the best. So the basis of it is like, hey, this shit's going to go wild and you're probably going to have a pretty good time, but you're not going to know. There's very few things you're going to know. And I think that is an amazing thing, especially for a takeaway of a series that, like, there's some amazing things that I would have loved to fucking experience from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of horrible shit too, absolutely, that I do not want to experience, but make for good reading. But to come away from that is like, that isn't necessarily out of the realm of possibility. It is very powerful to me, because it's like, oh, our world isn't that different from the world of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Of course, it's more fantastical. There's right. a lot of these extraterrestrial things that happen that obviously aren't happening here.
Big old sci-fi shit.
But what's the difference between that and having a crazy adventure in Spain when you're from America?
It's true. Yeah, it's stuff that you could not predict a lot of it.
I think that is not a sad or pessimistic or an overly cynical view or message. It is a perfect one because it's full of optimism.
Yeah,
It isn't nothing matters, so why do anything? It's nothing matters, so have fun. Like, right. Make the most of the time you have.
Yeah, this is so. What I'm about to say is something that I usually like leave without saying, as I'm sure you do in a lot of places. But if there's any place to outright state it, it's for a Hitchhiker's Guide. People often misuse. I finally, just before saying it right now, because I was trying to remember it throughout the entirety of this recording, the word for me to make this point with, and now it's like, I know that you guys don't have the buildup, but it's really satisfying for me, because now I remember it. The word nihilism. I didn't remember the word, and now I finally do.
Yeah,
so it's nihilism. So, a lot of people... And I'm repeating this because I this is another thing I've told to Ashley before, but I do want to put on a public forum, because a lot of people, whether for personal gain or just because they don't understand it, misuse nihilism, the whole nothing really matters viewpoint, which you can agree with or disagree with, and you know, this way or another, but for one, there's certain factual parts of it that you have to understand. Are going to happen in your life. But in addition to that, like Ashley just said and put beautifully, that's not nothing matters, so go fuck over your neighbor. You know, nothing matters, so be the piece of shit that you always wanted to be. I hope you didn't always want to be that. Like, it's nothing matters, so you might as well, you know, make something good out of it, make the most of it, help yourself, help others, and do what you can within your limitations to make the world a better place, sure, but at least just even make you, the life of you and those around you a little, just that tiny bit better. That's what nihilism, thank you, Ashley, over the course of our friendship for helping to teach me that's what nihilism is about. And there's a lot of people who abuse that idea and misphrase it and misframe it, yeah, so that they can...
They use it for pessimistic nihilism.
Yeah, and people use it to get away with doing shit. Like the whole, you know, because people love to use the incomplete phrase of life isn't fair as they spit in someone's eye, figuratively or literally. But, you know, it's supposed to be life isn't fair, so everything we just said. So just please take that. If you take anything out of this episode, for the love of all that is good in this world, please take that. If you're going to take it, fucking even away from the movie, I don't know how you would take this from the movie, but if you could try, just nothing matters, but just try and make it the best you can and be good where you absolutely, where possible. And don't beat yourself up over mistakes too much. You know, just try to improve for the future and be the person that you, whether you think you should be this or that, be the best person you can and just try the best for your future going forward, no matter what came behind you.
Yeah. And I will give this to the movie. They do basically have a scene saying all of this. It's when they first get the point of view gun, because Ford Prefect embodies true nihilism, and mm-hmm. he shoots Zaphod, and Zaphod basically says all of that. But I also want to include that I'm not against a happy ending for these characters,
right,
at all, but I think there should be a level of
proper handling,
because it's handed to them on a silver platter, and I don't think that's how it should be done. In so we're getting into spoilers for the actual book and radio series. I'm not sure if this is in the radio series, but I know it's in the books.
We're literally recording that shoot the shit tomorrow. So if you want to wait a little longer, then you can.
Well, I also just want to say spoilers because, like, I'm going to say it here to say I'm not against a happy ending. But spoilers because I want you to read these books. Everyone at home, I want you to read these books. I want you to come out saying the movie is shit. That's what I want. That's what I want to see. Put a comment on the fucking pod chaser of this episode.
Once you're done, the marker for when you're done is the exact words, the movie is shit. That's when you can let us know. That's how you can let us know you finished it. No, but if you like the movie, fine. But the books are better.
No, not fine.
But the books are better, a lot better, and so is the radio show.
So yeah, one last spoiler warning for the books. And I want to put a little pause here for people to be able to reach into their pockets and pause the episode.
So 5.
We should 4, be good.
3. 2.
I guess we're doing a countdown.
Yeah, I thought it was only fair.
So in the end of book 4, Arthur finds a planet that is very similar to Earth with people he's very compatible with. And he basically says, you know what? I think I'm done with hitchhiking and I just want to settle down somewhere and make the most out of the rest of my life. And I'm pretty sure he has a whole family there. And that's the end of Arthur's story as I believe it, because I don't believe in book 5 or 6. They're not real. And I think that's an amazing ending for them. It's happy. It ends things. That's why I hate book 5, because book 5, can you guess what it does?
I can.
Earth is back. Fuck you.
The
what Douglas if this... Adams, that's the one most stupid thing you've ever done.
Two things. One, what if this episode just ended on Earth is back? And two, the thing is, you might be surprised by this with me. When there was a part of me, a large part of me, where when Arthur, how did I still almost forget his name? When Arthur and Trillian and Ford, I'm okay with leaving my pauses in for that. Ford Prefect, when the three of those guys were about to go like travel throughout the universe, I was actually disappointed as well, because a part of me wanted them to, like, a part of me was like, oh, they have he has the opportunity to have a second chance at this when the original was destroyed, and to settle back down and to have like this new perspective and things like wrapped up in a neat little bow. And I thought you would have been even more mad at something like that happening. But
oh yeah, if you stayed on Earth, I would have shit myself.
Okay. But yeah, because
he chose not to, I just think he shouldn't have been given the choice. I think that he should have, maybe not should have, but there should have been a moment where he was contemplating staying on Earth. And then they said, all right, everybody, pull the plug. We're demolishing it because we need the resources elsewhere. I think that is a very Hitchhiker's thing to do. But they don't do it.
Which is part of the reason that, like, I'm actually not sure I actually want to read The Hitchhikers, because, and that's not to discredit it as a wonderful piece of hilarious and well-written fiction. That is to say, it might not be the story for me, just because, you know, not everybody, because taste, so here's another little note to add for those of you who need to hear this, because there's a surprising fucking amount of people who need to hear this. Including myself, even just like a couple years back. You don't need to like everything that's good. You respecting it is enough as like something that, you know, had a lot of effort put into it, that something that has passion and, you know, love and is well crafted. You can respect it as that without needing to say that you like it. Like, yeah, I mean, I could come up with all the examples in the world, but you understand what I mean. You know, if you don't like Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, you don't have to like it. Like, you can say it's well-crafted, but it ain't my style. And more people should be comfortable with saying things like that. And so that this was my segue into that point, where it's like, I think Hitchhiker's Guide is a beautiful thing that I probably wouldn't enjoy as much as another person.
The thing is with all of that being said, you should still consume the media.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because it's seminal work. Hitchhiker's Guide is a seminal work that is not given the respect it deserves.
The only reason
sci-fi giants, I think, framed sci-fi for the future is obviously Twilight Zone, number one. If you're not going to do anything else sci-fi, watch Twilight Zone.
Even I've the seen original. Twilight Zone.
If you're going to do two things for sci-fi, read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It is not only just an amazing sci-fi work, but amazing writing, comedy, world building, everything. Even if you don't necessarily like the core theme of the world is fucking crazy, make the best of it. And not in the, like, people get beat up unnecessarily. Sometimes it happens. I mean, shit happens, yes, but a lot of the adventures do lead to them getting beat up for pretty understandable reasons, because I think that from what I gather from you, that's what you dislike the most, is like shit just happens to characters and you don't like that.
Well, it's
because,
like,
it's like they don't deserve it.
It's like when, well, two things. For one, when I should have probably said this before, and I left this implied and I really shouldn't have. The reason I was considering not reading it was not because I don't like it, because I don't like the general theme alone, but also because it seems like a rather large commitment to make for something that I may not end up liking. Because am I mistaken in believing there is a large amount of content to read from it?
I mean, if you want to read all of the books, yes. If not, the books are actually pretty thin.
Okay.
If you wanted to read the entire five-part trilogy, it's basically just a big book.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, that's fine.
I'll literally send you a picture. One moment.
As you're doing that, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to leave that in. I'm not even going to raise the volume of that. The thing is, so here's a trope in dark comedy that I don't know if I brought this up on a podcast before. I'm going to bring it up here, though. Something that at first was pretty inventive and funny and unexpected, and I know I'm not the only one here, have grown so fucking tired of. It's the trope of, and this happens more in movies. I don't know if this happens in Hitchhiker's Guide. An innocent character, or for no good reason, this happens to a character, you know, they're happy, they're doing something either mundane or joyful, accomplishing something even, and then just abruptly something happens to them that either fatally injures them or just flat out kills them instantly. And it always feels more like an eh than a ha 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 to me, like, just because I'm not into that kind of dark comedy. But also, it feels like every fucking thing that has dark comedy in it, like, feels like it needs to do that. And so now it's not even an unexpected thing. Like, there's a similar thing that happens in the new The Suicide Squad, and I'm not going to reveal how it happens because it just came out from when we're recording this. But if you've seen it, you probably know the part I'm talking about. No, it wasn't an innocent character, but it's a similar way that this was done, where you can totally see it fucking coming. And it's just the same thing done with not much consequence besides just that character being flat out gone. And it's just, there's so many better ways to do that kind, even if you like that kind of joke. There's better, more inventive, more creative, more unique ways to do that a lot of writers skip out on because, ha ha ha, this joke is funny again, I guess. So what you said reminded me of that. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of, if something shitty happens to a character, I always want it to be something that in some way they've legitimately earned, rather than, I mean, anything could happen, and, you know, life isn't fair, and so bad things happen to good people, and so this is just going to happen, because that's the kind of people that the people beating them up are, or killing them, or whatever kind of story you're grabbing it from. In my opinion...
How did you feel about The Demolition of Earth? Is that the kind of same style?
When I was younger and I first heard of it, that took me a while to actually even want to continue watching the movie after, because I'm like, well, you just did a thing where, like, if it happened halfway through the movie, I would have straight up just shut it off, but because I just started this movie, I guess I'll give it a little more time. And so then I end up watching the rest of it and this was when I was like maybe 11, but there's already enough of that shit that goes on in real life. Why do we need to add this into this, especially I understand the general idea it's putting across, but again, like I just said, there's so much bit, like, and I'm not saying specifically in that case, because the destruction of Earth, a number of reasons for that being like fitting for the plot, at least the way they do it in the original source material, but a lot of the ways they do those abrupt innocent people dying thing or being injured, it is just a wasted opportunity. It is just a cheap joke done for the sake of, hey, we all know that joke, and it's still somehow funny to people. Like, and somehow so many people just haven't gotten tired of it. Like, it almost feels Family Guy-esque at this point when that happens, in my opinion.
But, like, now, with the destruction of Earth.
I knew it was coming, and so it was softened, so I couldn't really give the same perspective on it.
Okay, because I'm thinking, like, it isn't just a random thing that happens, too. Like, there's a reason behind it.
Yeah, for the Hitchhiker's Guide story, like I said,
there's reason behind. Well, if there's reason behind it, does that make it better? Is that acceptable to you, then? If, like, a shitty thing happens, but the person doing it has a reason, it's not just a random act of aggression.
I think... if the specific act of that having happened to what it's happening to, you know, the person doing that to Earth in this case, that if that contributes to the plot in a meaningful way, like it does in the original Hitchhiker's Guide, and in this one, frankly, if that's an in-character thing, and if the way it happens makes sense for the actual story, for more than just funny things are happening in this story and this is one of them, then it's on the more acceptable side. But that's only a perspective I've started to grow within the past 3 or 4 years of my life.
Well, yeah, because I don't think, like, the pure destruction of Earth is meant to be seen as a funny thing. I think most of the humor comes from the dry, bureaucratic nature of Vogons being like, fuck you, Vogons, why are you so bureaucratic?
Yeah, this is an example of it being done right. I was not complaining about it.
Yeah, because I don't think it's necessarily like the comedy isn't that they're destroying the earth. The comedy is they're doing it in such a mundane way. Like right. It is literally just a part of their job.
The fact of it being that mundane and quick and just that happened is part of the story and necessary because of what message they're trying to put across. Again, like I said, this is not an example of where they do it wrong. I'm just saying a lot of stories do the same thing. I'm just
trying to figure out where you draw a line. Yeah. Because, like, shitty people do shitty things. Is that the same? Because how you've described it could literally describe any antagonist.
So I'm glad that you're asking these questions because I'm having to define it. And it makes sense in my head, but I'm trying to put it into words. Let me think. I get because I'm trying to figure out how it's different from other ways that people do it. And in a lot of ways, it's not different. I'll admit that. It's just there's something about it that's different to me.
Is it because it's not necessarily framed as a joke? It is a bad thing that bad people are doing. Because the way you're describing it is you don't like it when bad things happen to innocent people. And then with maybe the added caveat is as a punchline.
Maybe that's it.
Because if it's not a punchline, if your thing is just it doesn't matter if it's a punchline or not, then that describes literally every conflict of every movie.
I didn't even realize that it had to be like that. It had to be a punchline for a joke for me to have a problem with it. Thank you for clarifying that, because now I'm like,
because the Hitchhiker's Guide doesn't make a punchline of suffering other than in Marvin's case, but it's more that he exaggerates his suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Then he actually suffers.
Yeah, and to be clear to people, I do want to say, it doesn't make it better if it lasts longer for anybody who might make that assumption. It is absolutely not. I'm just saying this is a thing that's often done. But yeah, I think it's if it's done as a punchline. That's what I have a problem with.
Maybe suffering is you're supposed to laugh at suffering, unless it's to a horrifically bad person, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And I can absolutely agree with you there. And I'm glad we've talked about this now in more depth, because it really just seemed like you didn't like antagonists.
I'm glad we cleared this up, because I've never had to put this into words before.
I think you would love Hitchhiker's Guide then.
I've never had to articulate. Because most of
the suffering isn't a punchline. Oh, wait, there is one character who you're actually gonna fucking hate how that happens, because that is exactly what it is. Their suffering is a punchline.
How far in is it?
That's like third book.
Okay, I'll just
read. And it's only a little bit. It's only for maybe a chapter.
That's so fucking long.
Not in Hitchhiker's Guide. Look at the picture.
That's true.
That's five books. The chapters are minuscule.
But yeah, I guess so. God, you know, Ashley, I can't even describe how grateful I am that you've actually made me put this into words, because I've never had to before, and now I like understand my own opinion more. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's really not much more to say. Do you have any more thoughts on the movie?
Damn it, I thought you were just gonna say Hitchhiker's Guide and we were just gonna start Shoot the Shit right
no,
now.
No, I was no. We're doing Shoot the Shit tomorrow, and that's fucking final. Because I have very barely any energy left.
No, not really. Everything I'm gonna say is related to the source material.
Yeah, so after this, if you're looking for something else to listen to, tomorrow we're gonna record the sequel that you can then listen, then Shoot the Shit. That by the time you're hearing this, you can now listen to.
What's going to be weird is for people listening to these in order, like each of these podcasts in order from dates that they came out, they're going to hear our afterthoughts before our thoughts.
Oh, yeah. No, I considered that a lot, and it was a somewhat regret, but it was also we can avoid that by just not saying much about the movie when we talk about. Or saying that
I don't regret it, because you know what? Shit happens. Yeah. You got to make the most of it. So, Stevie, one last question for you.
Okay.
Your rating system.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for fucking reminding me. Okay. So I'm going to give you three guesses, though the first two don't count. For those of you who don't know my fucking rating system, it's all of them are yes or no questions. The first one, do I like this movie? The second one, would I watch it again with a buddy? The third one, would I watch it again on my own? And I'm gonna offer a little bit of a time for a drum roll on this one, just because this one's going to be a bit of a doozy, and this isn't going to happen a lot in this podcast. This is a clean sweep no, and that is a hardcore answer, because they're and similarly to with, we're going to keep referencing this fucking movie, aren't we? With Space Jam 2. Similarly to Space Jam 2
is our Achilles heel.
So you don't have to know a lot about that movie for this. Don't worry. But similarly to Space Jam 2, there are parts of this that I'm actually really into. And the main part, since we've already gotten to the end, where he's touring the backup Earth, I'll very happily watch that again. And well, actually, that might be the only part of this movie. But yeah, there's part, and there's other parts of this I wouldn't necessarily rewatch, but I do enjoy. Like we've addressed here, we've had to defend this movie more than we care to. This is like the.
I hate you made me do that.
But there are redeemable parts of this movie, but it is nowhere remotely near enough for me to tolerate watching it again. And if you like it again, fine, but we don't, and it's a very clear no, and you are not going to hear a lot of clean sweep no's. Or at least I hope not. I don't want to do a lot of clean sweep no's. But anyway.
It'd be sad if this just turned into the Ash and Stevie hate movies podcast.
I mean this genuinely. At the first sign of that, I want to like switch tracks if that ever happens, because I genuinely hate the idea of having too many no's. And so yeah. That's why we started off with things like John Wick and Beetlejuice, because I fucking love those movies. And I know with John Wick, it was obviously clean sweep yes, Beetlejuice clean sweep yes. I don't want to have them all clean sweep yeses, because that makes things interesting. But I certainly don't want clean sweep no's all the time. But yeah, this will be one of those rare times that this is a definite in that case, and it is an easy answer. But anyway.
And I think I will also answer these questions.
Okay, yeah,
because we might defer on these.
Oh yeah, absolutely, go ahead.
No, I did not like this movie. The second one is watch it with a friend.
Yeah,
depending on the friend, I would watch it again with a friend.
If this was, if I hopped into an alternate reality and it turned out that a friend I hold near and dear to my heart, this is their absolute favorite movie, I'll watch it again with them. Like, if there's an alternate Ashley.
Whoa, wait. If one of your friends says it's their absolute favorite movie, you shouldn't have a friend. No. Absolutely not. This hypothetical cannot exist, because you should know better.
This is not in the probability
than to befriend a person. There, you could not have this happen with the improbability drive, because it is impossible anyway. To have a friend that this is their favorite movie.
So go ahead.
I would watch it with specific friends, and only if I have already shown them other media of Hitchhiker's Guide, so that I could yell at the movie with them. And no, of course I wouldn't watch it on my own again. Absolutely not. There was a moment I moved my mouse. I was like, how long more do I have? Yeah, I still had like 20 minutes, and that felt like an eternity.
Oh my God. I had that starting just under halfway through. I'm like, I have in my notes somewhere. This is the second one where I didn't look at my notes, but like I distinctly remember that I have in my notes like maybe 40% of the way through this movie that if I wasn't doing an episode on this, I would have just turned it off by this point.
Yeah, I just don't take notes anymore, so I can't recount exactly when it happened, but it was like 20-25 minutes before end credits.
By now, I only take notes as like basically like the same purpose as tying a string around your pinky so that you can remember things. Like, but I don't refer back to them anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't do it because normally after I watch the movie or record, like right after, I normally don't have to wait for Stevie.
So anyway.
That wasn't Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but it was, and that's the sad part.
It was a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Not the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's a good way
not
to put it.
Not deserving of the name.
That was H G T T G. H G T T G. That's the most we're willing to call it.
GTG, gotta go.
Yeah, so
that's what you say if somebody says that, like, we want to watch the movie for Hitchhiker's Guide. Exactly. Like, no.
Oh, it's my favorite Hitchhiker's Guide. Come on, watch it.
I would shoot them.
If you want to hear any more of us, and if you want to hear us talk about something we enjoy a lot more than this movie, especially like we referenced earlier, ashandstevie.com. We got a bunch of stuff there. We got these movie nights. We got Ash and Stevie Shoot the Shit. You can also find there, as we reference here, you can go to that website to find it. The link is in the description. You can also find Ashley's controversial opinions on nerdy shit. She's done some Star Trek and some other shit. You can find...
I haven't done other shit yet. I'm still procrastinating writing for that plan.
You can find most of the cartoons that I've made that I'm still proud of, which is a decent little collection. You can find all my monthly pieces there. But yeah. And Ashley, would you like an outro?
No.
Have a lovely time.